Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Ontex second quarter and half year 2015 results conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. Today's call will be hosted by Charles Boueziz, Chief Executive Officer, and Jack Pernode, Chief Finance Officer. Following the opening comments, an interactive Q&A session will be available. A copy of today's announcement and presentation is available on www.ontexglobal.com. I would like to remind everyone that the Safe Harbor statements apply to this presentation and the subsequent Q&A session. I would now like to hand the call over to Charles Boueziz. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to our Ontex call. I will go straight to the slide four and tell you that we have another strong half year in 2015, validating our resilience of our model in challenging times. We made progress in all our four divisions and in the three categories where we operate for the first half of the year. And we will develop this further in a moment, but I would like to confirm that retail brands in our categories continued to take share in both Western Europe and Eastern Europe. Our reported revenue of close to 853 million is representing a 5.3% growth and a 4.4% like-for-like growth for the first half. Then Q2 reported a 4.3% growth and a like-for-like of 3.6%, rebalancing as expected and as previously said in our previous call. As we will see later, we continue to see good growth in our largest category, women baby care, over 5% on a like-for-like basis. Before I turn to profitability, I would like to highlight that, as we've said before, we maintain our disciplined commercial approach as the way to create sustainable long-term value. This enabled us to continue to expand our margins in H1 despite increased competitive intensity and some headwinds at the first quarter. Our adjusted EBITDA of 110 million euro, up 11.5%, adjusted EBITDA margin of 12.9%, represents 72 basis points of expansion during the first half. Then a main driver, the first one behind this improvement, is efficiency gains, while at the same time we are further invested in sales and marketing, as well as support functions, continuing our transformation journey highlighted since more than a year. These efficiency gains have been able to mitigate the negative impact coming from higher fluff pulp prices, which is also a US dollar denominated raw material. In particular in Q2, another driver for the margin expansion at gross margin level was the lower price of all base commodities. Not yet impacting the first quarter, but supporting Q2 as expected and as we flagged previously. We will comment later on how we see current trends of oil-based commodities and Forex evolution affecting profitability trends in the second half of the year. But I'd like to be very clear here. We are on track to deliver on our full-year objective, to deliver about 30 basis points of adjusted EBITDA margin expansion. Last but not least, our free cash flow posted solid results generation, back to a greater EBITDA and working capital contribution. Consequently, I'm very pleased that we further decrease our leverage to 2.43 times as of June 30, 2015, which is for us very important looking forward to the future. Let me flip to page slide 5. I'd like to spend some time to provide you with some context on the external factors affecting our markets. Let's first start with the markets themselves. First of all, they have continued to grow, albeit in some regions at a slower rate, and this is the case for Western European markets. Those markets grew slower than the Euromonitor forecast in the first part of the year. For developing markets, we continue to see growth as a result of both increasing volumes as well as higher prices. Those prices implemented to offset the impact of devaluating currencies. Within this context, retailer brands in our categories have continued to take share of our markets in both Western and Eastern Europe. In baby and adult inco up in Western Europe and in femcare flat, but all up in Eastern Europe. Which doesn't mean that it's true country by country, it's an average of all the baskets of countries. We have flagged this in the past quarter. Competitive pressures remain very high. This translates into price competition for volumes in both retail and institutional markets in Western Europe. And we've also seen competition increasing in some of our North African markets. Now let's turn to the raw material prices and the Forex. Given more volatile markets, they are on top of everybody's mind. I'll try to describe the current situation. Overall, cost of our major raw materials decreased in H1 2015 versus 1 year ago. The lower oil-based raw material costs outweighed higher fluff pulp prices, as we already highlighted before. Now, you might remember that in the first quarter, we didn't get any material benefit from oil-based commodities, and this trend, as foreseen, reversed noticeably, as expected and flagged during our Q1 communication. We recorded a strong commodities tailwind during the second quarter. Regarding fluff pulp, costs remain near record high levels. Purchased in US dollar throughout the first half of the year, we combine the double impact of a strong US dollar as well as a high RISI index. This has been commented upon by some of our peers, but the main reason behind it's essentially supply-demand imbalance. Entering the second half of 2015, levels are so far broadly in line with where they were this time last year. But again, please don't forget this particular raw material is US denominated. We will comment on guidance and outlook later, but as we already flagged at our Q1 communication, for all base commodities, the indices have started rising again since March and have continued to increase further, which will impact our cost of goods in Q3 and potentially Q4. As you remember, there's a time lag between the indices and the implementation of the price increase. But let's comment finally on currency. As I mentioned on the previous slide and on the top line, we had positive currency impact related to the British pound and Turkish lira, while the Russian ruble had a negative impact. For adjusted EBITDA, the main negative impact came from the US dollar. At current rates, Forex will continue to be a headwind. Now, let's flip to page 6. In this context, we have been able to continue to post solid results. There are, of course, several reasons for that, but in essence, this is down to the strengths of our balanced portfolio and a prudent, disciplined approach when it comes to assessing growth opportunities. We delivered 4.4% like-for-like growth in H1 and 3.6% in Q2. The fact that overall this reflects previous comments from Q1, it's a rebalancing from growth between Q1 and Q2, which explain the patterns for Q2. The benefit of a balanced portfolio composition is allowing us to first seize growth opportunities in attractive region at attractive conditions. Revenue growth has been captured in developing markets. Growth markets and MENA combined grew by 19% like-for-like in H1. We continue to be selective in Western Europe, where competitive pressure remains strong. We have a very disciplined approach commercially, and we maintain that approach. As I previously said in different communication, you always find competitors that are ready to commit suicide to gain new customers, and we are not, because this has a long-lasting effect. We accept the fact that this can have unfavorable impact on gains and losses in the short term, but we also mention that we are not looking at quarter gains and losses, but we are looking at long-term trends, and what matters for us is delivering sustainable growth, but sustainable, profitable growth. Nonetheless, I want to stress that we will see growth, and at a group level, we still see Ontex growing ahead of its markets. The discipline I'm talking about is simply reflecting the level of our performance. As already mentioned, we are also leveraging efficiencies to continue to invest in support of growth through increased sales and marketing spend. This is reflected in the margins improvements we are able to post during the first half, but also in the operational excellence we continue to strive for that is part of Ontex's DNA. We are also making investments in our IT systems to support future business growth, which means that we probably have a slightly increased CapEx level above our 3% guidance for the full year, because we believe it's the right time to prepare for long-term sustainable growth. This very good H1 gives us confidence to deliver further moderate margin expansion for the full year, in line with our model. Now, let me give you some colors regarding our division and go to slide 7. Let's focus first now on mature markets retail. In the market context I described earlier for Western Europe, the division posted a 1% like-for-like revenue growth in the first half, with an imbalance and a decrease in the second quarter. Well, this trend is in line with our expectations and reflects the rebalancing between Q1 and Q2 we mentioned during our Q1 release. It also illustrates also what we mean by disciplined approach and the fact that we are not chasing growth at unreasonable conditions, like some competitors. When we look at our different markets, we can say that H1 2015 revenue was higher year on year in countries like Australia, Poland, Southern Europe. It's clear that if you look at UK, that is probably an area of focus on emergence as one country, the performance was lower in H1 2015. But if you remember at IPO time, we explained that when you get market share above 80%, the odds of growing are more limited than the odds of slightly decreasing. And some of those markets are very competitive, so the consequence is lots of focus from competition as well in those markets. The sales of this division, however, benefited from a positive currency impact due to the British pound. Now, if you flip to slide 8, which is dealing with the growth markets, we experienced strong volume growth in this division, and this was also coupled with specific pricing action. Our first half translated into a growth of 42.8%, with a second quarter like-for-like growth of 49.2%. If I go back to my earlier remark about the strength of our model and the benefit of a balanced portfolio, it's clear, as it's the name of the division, the growth market division is an essential part of our growth model, providing acceleration, and this is, of course, the result of favorable demographics in those regions, as well as rising adoption rates. In the first half of 2015, we saw that performance was, of course, mainly driven by Russia, both from a volume and revenue standpoint. And if you remember, Russia is still a big part of this division. Reported growth continued despite very dynamic currency environments. Volumes continued to grow, including small but growing retailer brand category. And industry-wide, prices have risen to compensate for the negative Forex impact. In parallel, we also were able to capture additional volumes in Central Eastern Europe. So I'd like to reiterate that for a division like growth markets, Yes, there is strong price in Russia, but we also have strong volume growth in Russia. In challenging economic conditions, we benefit from a step change to retailer brands, leveraging our deep experience in this part of the business. This is our model, and this is not by accident. Our portfolio offers us access to strong growth. Now, if you travel a little bit more, we'll go to slide 9 and we'll go to MENA. On MENA, we can say that the growth recorded in this division mostly came from the growth of our branded sales in Turkey, where adult incontinence is growing nicely and where we are market leader on adult incontinence. Turkey is still a big part of the MENA division, and it's a very important strategic country for us, as it is a branded country, with a brand that you probably remember, Çandebe. At the same time, we continue to progress in some countries that are also very strategic, such as Pakistan, with double-digit growth, where we continue to build our position and where we leverage our local production. We have mentioned in Q1 the fact that the region is exposed to political instability in some countries, and there is no doubt that this has also been the case in Q2. We also are working to optimize our distribution network to address reduced liquidity in some of the countries and facing high competition in some of our Northern African countries. As a consequence, the trends discussed above, growth in MENA was 4.2% on a like-for-like basis in H1, 2.19% for Q2. On slide 10, we'll get into the healthcare markets. Sales grew by 0.7% on a like-for-like basis for the first half of the year and 0.2% on the second quarter. You all know that top-line growth remains very challenging in these markets given government spending pressures. Nevertheless, we continue to take share. In previous communication, we explained that sometimes volumes were growing, but the net revenue of the markets was declining because of this pressure on price that was affecting the overall size of the market. But disregarding this, we are still continuing to grow. During the first half of the year, we observe a good performance in Italy on the back of continued growth in home delivery. It's very important for us because Italy is Serenity. It's the acquisition we made in 2013. Home delivery also developed favorably in the UK. And overall, France and Benelux continued to grow. An expected revenue decline in Germany is entirely due to some scaled-down contracts, as disclosed in previous quarters, driven by drop in profitability that we were not willing to take. The positive forex impact of the British pounds is also impacting the division on the reported growth. Now, if we look at our category growth on slide 11, we can also report progress on the three categories. Let me start with baby care. Baby care sales showed continued like-for-like growth in H1 against an exceptionally high comparable period last year, which was due to the exit of a competitor. Growth achieved with retailer brands in both developed and developing markets, also driving on tax brands in developing markets. So this translates into a 5.2% growth, which is pretty strong. On adult incontinence category, growth was driven by performing sales in pull-ups, institutional channels revenue higher, and retail revenue increased by 14% on a like-for-like basis, also reflecting the dynamics of the category in the retail channel. This translated into a 4.5% like-for-like growth. One disappointing element was the performance in fem care, which reported a moderate first half like-for-like revenue growth of 0.5%. This is unfortunately in line with Western European retailer brands' performance on this category, where most of our sales take place, as this category is not overweighted in our portfolio outside of Western European markets. Now I'd like to hand over to Jacques Pionnaud, our financial review. Jacques.
Okay, thank you, Charles. Morning, everybody. As you heard, Charles has already commented on the top line and EBITDA trends for H1 and Q2, so I would like to rapidly comment on some other key metrics on the slide 13. First, gross margin as a key driver of our profitability and margin expansion. H1 gross margin was 240 million, an 8% increase compared to last year, and that in spite of a negative foreign exchange impact, mainly related to raw material purchases in US dollar. As a percentage of sales, H1 gross margin expanded to 28.1%, 69 basis points higher than last year. The main driver of this growth was our ongoing focus on capturing efficiencies. In this regard, we can say that this year we have had special focus on energy consumption, and here we have program of several millions going on. I could give you later some more details, but it go from changing the fans in the engines in the manufacturing plants to going to low consumption bulbs. You see, very wide and very powerful. Obviously, the tailwind from oil-based commodities in the second quarter also played a role. Secondly, operating profit. As you can see, it increased by 50.7% in H1 compared to the same period last year, so it's impressive. Next to strong gross margin growth, there is also an important difference in this operating profit, and it comes from a much lower non-recurring expenses compared to last year. You would remember that several times you were asking us when we would stop having so much non-recurring. We told you it was ongoing, and it comes out of these results now. Last year we had 20 million related to IPO, and this year we have only 2.3 million. All the details on this non-recurring can be found in an appendix and also in the H1 report. I'd like to briefly mention on net finance cost. As you can see, the benefits of first the IPO in June last year, obviously, and the refinancing in late 2014 is very visible in this half year, and it's obviously another main driver behind the strong net profit growth. On the tax line, you can see that our tax expense were 17 million, and as previously announced, we see our full year tax rate in the mid-20s. Now, moving to slide 14. Some words again on our margin expansion, because you have seen that we are both growing our top line and our margins, which is not something everybody can achieve these days. First of all, a clear positive, obviously, the gross margin and its expansion by 69 basis points. As I already said, coming mainly from ongoing focus on capturing efficiencies. Here again, I gave you already some details like our energy consumption program, and obviously it's only one of the program we have. You know that we continue each and every year to have more than 100 of these programs going on. Another aspect which impacted positively our gross margin has been the fact we have been taking price. We did price increase in several countries, and as also mentioned, we benefited from oil-based commodities tailwinds in Q2, not Q1. This improvement took place in spite of very negative Forex impact linked to raw material purchases in US dollar. As in previous quarters, and in line with our stated ambition to continue to support our profitable growth and make it sustainable, we have continued to invest in sales and marketing as well as in sales functions over the semester, even with some acceleration in sales and marketing. At EBITDA, the negative FX impact was almost 9 million in H1, of which 4 million in Q2. Now moving to slide 15 and talking about free cash flow. We are quite pleased to record a very material increase in free cash flow, driven by, on one hand, strong operating performance, and on the other hand, working capital management. You can see our adjusted free cash flow was 107 million compared to 46 same period last year. So, as I said, main drivers were a strong adjusted EBITDA growth for the first half of the year, again growing double digit, especially driven by strong Q2 contribution. In H1, the working capital represents 9.5% of our sales, which is lower than our guidance of 12%. By the way, for those of you who would have questions, in general, we keep our guidance of 12% as what we see for the full year. This performance in working capital was mainly due to a focus on receivables collection, but also benefited from a one-off sale of 16 million of Italian VAT receivable. You would remember that these were this famous VAT receivable we built up in Italy last year due to a until we could put in place a VAT free warehouse. So we now have got the money back. Capital expenditure H1 were 15.3 million, and as you know, we have always a phasing of capex with higher expenditure to be expected in H2. Now moving on slide 16. Again, you can imagine from a financial side, it's a slide I like very much, because you see that we further decrease our leverage as a combination of EBITDA growth and working capital management. All in all, net debt at June 30 amounted to 505 million, and net leverage based on the last 12 months adjusted EBITDA was 2.4. It's down from almost 3 at end of 2014, so it's a very nice deleverage. When you look at the cash and cash equivalent, we were at 116 million, and the revolving credit facility of 100 million was fully undrawn, which means it gives us an available liquidity of 216 million, which I must say I like very much. I would like now to give the floor back to Charles for some words on the outlook. Charles, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Jack. So if you go on slide 18, turning to our outlook after what I would qualify a robust first half performance, despite a tougher environment, which demonstrates the strength of our Ontex model, we remain committed to deliver sustainable, profitable growth over the full year. While the growth in our key developed markets is slower than last year, despite outperformance, and overall at the low end of the range of 3-4%, we continue to aim to outperform by helping retailers to grow their brands and by increasing our Ontex brand shares. Accessing faster growth in our developing markets allows us to maintain commercial discipline in more competitive developed markets. And despite the outlook for commodities, and at current rates of foreign exchange, for the full year 2015, we confirm our aim to deliver about 30 basis points of adjusted EBITDA margin expansion. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles and Jack. With that, could operator, could we move to the Q&A, please?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find your question has already been asked, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. As a reminder, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for a moment to allow participants to signal. Our first question comes from Alan Vanderberg of KBC. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having my questions. I have a few. I was trying to know if you could give some flavor or impact of the commodity tailwinds in Q2 on EBITDA. That's my first question. Then another question regarding your outperformance, which you highlighted. I was wondering if you could provide or give at least an idea on the degree of outperformance of Ontex during the first half of 2015. Furthermore, I was also wondering if you could detail or explain how we should interpret or read your confirmed 30 basis points EBITDA improvement guidance, given that you already realized a 12.9% EBITDA or adjusted EBITDA in the first half of 2015. And then my last question, your leverage at the end of Q2 was 2.4. I was wondering if you could give any idea on how it should move from here, also knowing that you are saying that you're working capital guidance of 12% is confirmed, or should we expect leverage to increase towards year end? Thanks.
Okay, so
some questions on thank you. For you,
Jacques. Yeah, think, maybe I'll first tackle the questions which are more in my camp, and then Charles is probably going to talk more about the market or performance on sales. So, first of all, the commodity impact on Q2. You know that we never disclose, in fact, the detailed commodities and impact per type of raw materials. One thing which I can tell you in order to help, and I understand you like some guidance, but look, if we take all in all, the combined impact of FX and commodities index, so outside of our into our actions, let's say, outside of our procurement actions, we can say that we had a slightly negative impact in H1. So if you take FX, negative plus some positives, you take the commodities index evolution, you get a slightly negative impact in H1. Obviously, we have, as I said, and that's very important, we have important efficiency and procurement program, which are obviously helping us, and which explain why we have been able to beat, and despite this negative or this headwind on FX and commodities combined, we could get over the and deliver these big margins. Now, also, let's not forget, and it's something which is sometimes forgotten, that we have taken price. We have taken price in several of our countries, and with big success, by the way. So this was around commodity, around the 30 basis point. Indeed, you're right, we deliver a very strong H1. Here we can see that, we see a difference from the rest of the year, because we say 30 basis points in the full year, which if you can make the maths, it's obvious that we would not make the same performance in H2. Where does it come from? I think we see a lot of volatility still in Forex, and we see that the oil-based commodities have gone on the wrong direction, so we see a headwind there. Obviously, you have seen in the last days that the oil is quite volatile. Yesterday it was going down, and we're talking a lot about the surplus. So potentially we could see the indices on oil base again going slightly down, but that's the whole volatility, and we prefer to be on the safe side. Now we also, I told you, have made a lot of progress, and we have had some exceptional procurement performance, which are not necessarily going to happen again in second half of the year. But all in all, we come back on 30 basis points of performance. Leverage is in fact something important for us. We told you that we see between 2.5 and 3.5 leverage is our comfort zone. We are now even lower than 2.5. Working capital, I told you the 9.5% is helped by the fact we have sold our Italian VAT receivable, 16 million. It's a one-off, so you can, which is not going to happen again in second half. So explain a little bit why we will have this movement. So that's basically it for me. The rest is, we are pushing on the performance on our receivables. We see some impact of the action plan we have had in our different divisions, and that's why we are confident with our 12%. So I think it's these were my questions. Maybe Charles on the market.
On the degree of outperformance in H1, I would say, as you probably no, we have different divisions operating with different models. So I will try to walk you through some of them, of course, without disclosing too many details, because we don't want to share this with competition. But if you look at the first element, is Western European market is growing less. I told you at the beginning of the call, less fast than assumed in the model and by, let's say, Euromonitor or the panelists. Which means that, in fact, the growth is, for the first half in value, around 0.3%, which is very low. And growing by 1 percentage point means that we outperform the market by 0.7, at least on the first half of the year. And again, this is broad figures, and it's a mixed bag between some of Western European markets, like UK, that is probably creating an overweight in the perception because it's a difficult market now, and as a consequence has probably put colors that are not the right colors for the overall performance. If I look at Central Eastern Europe, countries like Poland, Russia, we are outperforming, which, you know, we are growing much faster than the market. When I say much faster, it's far more than 2-3 points of difference, so which is clearly a strong outperformance. And if we look at countries like Turkey, as I said, is we are also growing faster than the market, so like Pakistan. Now, in healthcare, we will provide more data on the full year basis, because there's no panel that is giving us a performance by quarter or by half year. It's more a performance that is a consolidation of the full year. But as we foresee and as we explain, is there is a compression on the revenue in those markets, not driven by volume, but driven by pricing. And if you assume, and this is our assumption at that stage, and the first element we have are negative growth, and we are still growing positively, this means that we are outperforming the market more or less by 1% on this category. So the performance is different in terms of scale by division. I would say it's clear that there is a much stronger performance in terms also of leverage, but it's also driven by the dynamics of the markets in the growth market division than it is, for instance, in healthcare, that is anyway a market that is much lower in terms of growth.
Okay, very clear. Thank you for your answers.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Eva Kuigurga from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I have a couple of questions, please. Could you remind us of the margin difference in your different regions, especially in growth markets? And can you maybe comment at least qualitatively how the margins in the growth markets have developed on the back of this very, very strong growth? Secondly, I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about sales and marketing, given that that has gone up quite a lot as a percentage of sales. And then lastly, I just wanted to come back to a comment that Jacques made on the input cost effect. You said that combined FX and input costs were slightly negative in H1. Is it fair to assume that they were slightly positive or at least flat in Q2 alone? Thanks.
Thank you. I think Jacques can take the first and the third.
Yeah. So margin per region, you know, it has been since the beginning a touchy subject because we're not really giving details on that. Obviously, what we said since the beginning is that this difference in margin would not really impact our total margin. What we see, obviously, is that our gross market has been increasing its margin with the price increase we have had. We've been able to price up, and not only in Russia, but in other markets, and which means our margins have increased. We are also, another thing we are doing, and which we told you, and it's in several countries, where we are getting step by step up to speed with our manufacturing, which is also decreasing our cost of manufacturing and so helping with our margin. So what you see is obviously a total margin improvement for the company, and we're very happy with that, and obviously especially for our growth markets. The third question was about FX commodities. In fact, what I say, and maybe I was not clear, is that if you take the FX and you take the indices, so the index, and you see the combined effect of these, then you have a headwind in H1. Obviously, once you add up our own, let's say, activities, actions, the procurement, plus the impact of our hedging, which we should not forget, hedging on both FX and commodities, then you come to a tailwind. And for the second part of the year, obviously, we continue to do our hedging. And I would say especially we see this hedging program, which just a reminder, a rolling program, delivering value to the company and putting us in a better position that if we have not hedged. That's something we obviously follow up closely. So we will continue this program. But with the volatility in oil and the fact that this is for oil-based commodities have gone up, and you know, this is something which is publicly available. So we see it growing up in the second part of the year. Q2 was obviously a really positive one, coming from oil-based impact, oil-based commodities impact. H2, we say we are much more prudent due to this oil-based evolution. Sales and marketing.
So I would like, Eva, to thank you for asking the question, because I think it's probably a miss. I should have highlighted this on sales and marketing. So it's not only, by the way, sales and marketing expense. If you look at the general administration, the G&A expense, they are growing as well. So if you look in combination of the two, it's really investing more on structure and on supporting the brand and the business. And when I look culturally backwards from previous companies, I was often asked the question about what means sustainability in business. And for me, the definition of sustainability in business is delivering profitable growth while continuing to invest and strengthen a company. And it's exactly what we are doing. It's not only that we are delivering strong bottom line results, but on top of that, it's not at the expense of our structure. So we are not cutting costs to deliver more financial results. It's more the opposite. We are strengthening the organization and we continue to deliver stronger results. So the reality is sales and marketing expenses, and that's mainly investments, are driven by two elements. Part of it is the buildup of capability, which is what we announced when we did the IPO. It's the transformation of the company from a manufacturing company into a consumer goods company. That has two consequences. The first one is strengthening some functions, sales and marketing, at group level, but also in the different divisions. And if you remember, we add the growth market division that creates also cost and investment in sales and marketing. That's one element. And the second element is we are supporting the brands, our Ontex brands, in the countries where we grow fast. As you can imagine, in Russia, if you grow double digit and it's above 40% growth, it's very important to ensure that you support the brand behind such a big growth. So supporting the brands means doing more advertising, so starting television campaigns, starting more advertising at the point of sale, so doing more animation, so getting trial to the products so that the consumer can experience our Ellen Harper baby diapers, for instance. So that's one part of it. And the second part of it is in mature retail markets where we don't own the brands, but we are behind the retailers to support their growth. It means that one way is supporting them in building stronger promotional activity. And even if they pay, let's say, the large part of their investment, because it's their brand, we support them in terms of bringing, I would say, intelligence, consumer and shopper intelligence, as we said, to these retailers. So the combination of this translates into a slight acceleration, or at least a move from 41 million to 48 million on first half, which even everything is relative in life. If you compare to a full consumer goods company and branded business, they would qualify this as a very limited and low investment. For us, we do it with a lot of discipline, so we go really step by step and very slowly. But as I said, and as we said during the IPO, it's a journey. We want to go step by step, strengthen our position, strengthen the organization, and do it at a pace that is acceptable for the P&L to make sure that we will deliver our 30 basis points of margin expansion.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you, Eva.
Our next question comes from Fernand de Boer from Peter Cam.
Yes, good morning. It's Fernand from Peter Cam. One question for me. In the other income, you had, I think, 3.6 million in the first half. Could you give an idea of what is behind that and how was it breaking out in the first quarter, second quarter? And the second question on that one is how do you see that evolving in the rest of the year?
Sorry, can you repeat the second part because we didn't hear you?
What should we expect? What should we take in our model for the full year on the 3.6 on the other income line, because it was quite higher than last year?
Okay, thank you for now. In fact, this line other income is completely linked to Forex impact, and you have there several items coming in. One is the results of our hedging. Second is also the revaluation of our accounts receivable and payables at the end of the period. So this is typically a line which fluctuates quite a bit, and which you can find part of it being a counterbalance of what you could find in other lines, because when you get the results of a hedging positive there, it means it's normally counterbalancing a negative you have had on some of the lines of your P&L. So that's why it should not be taken as an item in its own. now saying a prediction for the rest of the year, it's I don't have a crystal ball, so I guess you got as good information as I have got on this FX evolution. You have seen the volatility; it's changing every day. And be it the US dollar, be it other currencies, be it the Turkish lira, be it the ruble, and so on. So I don't have this answer, unfortunately.
But this figure is included in your EBITDA comments.
Yes, sure. It's in. And as I say, that you have to think about it as being a counterbalance of some other lines of the P&L. So yeah, not as a line in its own.
But then was it primarily in Q1 or Q2?
We have not come with a Q1. It's only a trading update in Q1, so I'll prefer to stay on H1, which, by the way, also importantly, you remember when we say we talked about our model, and it's maybe the right moment to remind everybody that our model is not a quarterly model. For some of the elements, it's also a model which is not a yearly model, but it's a model over time. When we said 30 basis points, we didn't say each and every year. Last year, we did more. This year, we did 50. This year, we say around 30. And it's the same for, working capital. It's the same about CapEx. It's also an evolution over a long period of time. It's not even a year on year, and certainly not a quarter to quarter.
Okay, thank you very much.
Welcome.
Our next question comes from Robert Waldenschmidt of Liberum. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. I've got three questions, if I may. Firstly, could you give us a little bit more sense of market growth rates by your primary categories, i.e. baby, adult incontinence, for retailer brands, please? Two, could you give us some flavor in terms of how the evolution of the volume and value split is at group level, given you've been able to achieve pricing in the period? And three, you've called out strong performance in Italy, in particular referencing Serenity, and I was just wondering if you could update us on how that deal has played out relative to expectations and what we can expect in future. Thank you.
Okay, so if I go back to your first question that is referring to the market growth rates by category, if I look at the baby care or the baby category, and if I understand your question, you said for retail brands, the retail brand share growth varies by market. So I would say, and I don't want to disclose it for all markets, but I would say it's growing more or less above 1% in every market above that level, up to close to 4%, with one exception of a decline that is UK. So it's the only countries with Italy is a very small country in retail brands, but that's the countries where you experience a negative trend. All the others are positive, so that's why the net combined is still continuing to grow pretty fast. So that's for baby care, first half 2015 versus first half 2014. If you look at fem care, as I said in the call, again, it's one market is slightly declining and noticeable. It's Spain with minus 1%. The balance is rather flat, which means that, as I said in the call, the fem care category was the one that is not growing fast. It's surprisingly it's stable. And if I look at adult care, I would say it's big growth with one exception, France, where retail brand share was at minus 2%, which is the exception. Having said that, in France, the market share of retail brands in retail, to your question, is 44% already. So it's pretty high level. whereas there's lots of opportunities in countries like, for instance, Italy or UK, where retail brand share is still around 20 or 25%. And these countries are growing in terms of share retail brand. And as an agglomerate, overall, it's growing fast. Your second question was to try to give a flavor of how our the mix between the volume growth and the price and the pricing impact in the growth. As we said and we continue to say in, since the IPO, our model in mature market retail is a volume-driven model by definition, and it's a margin power exercise, which means it's more a transformation of the product, a slight transformation to deliver more margin, rather than trying to pass price increase. Whereas when we own our brands and it's markets like MENA division as well as the Russian markets, it's a combination of volume and value, which is pricing. Whereas in healthcare, again, it's market where a big part of it is driven by tender and pricing, so it's more margin power than pricing power. So what I can, and I'm not sure it's satisfactory to your question because it's not as detailed as the first answer, but it's clear that we have expanded our volume and price in the MENA division as well as in the growth market division significantly. And in some countries, pricing was above, price increase were above 20%, so it's noticeable. And I always said, and I will continue to say, that the driver is the ability of the consumer to accept the price increase. The ultimate boss is the consumer. If you take price increase in those markets and the consumer has not the purchasing power, then you carry the risk of losing your business or reducing your growth. In the case of the two divisions, they successfully grow price and grew volume at the same time, which means that the consumer accepted the price increase. And by the way, we were not the only one to do it, so which helped us as well to make those price increase successful. If we look at the mature retail markets, as we said, there's more fight and lots of price competitiveness, especially, for instance, in the UK market. So it's clear that the growth is driven by volume rather than price. And that's not a surprise because that's also a point of strength of Ontex, is the ability, while delivering volume growth and not pricing expansion, to deliver margin expansion, which we continue to do as reflected by the first half results. The last, your last question is thanks for asking it because it's a very important one. It's, and I'm glad you picked up this on Serenity and on the Italian market in healthcare. You're right that at least I can guarantee you that as at the group level, we carefully monitor the performance of the Italian business because it's our last acquisition. And it's very important that we make it successful, and we are sure it is successful. So as a reminder, we bought this business in 2013. Serenity is the market leader in Italy with a market share that is in the range of 27%. And you know, a part of it is a tender business, so it's a region that are delivered with our products. I would say the measure of the success of Italy is at several levels. The first one is the integration of the business within Ontex. I would say for me, I tick the box. It's a very positive success because the team is totally part of the Ontex family. Some of the people, and I said that in previous calls, are joining the group level to get Ontex functions. Some of the Ontex people went to Italy to work for Serenity. And culturally, it's a great fit, so that works very well. That's point number one. Point number two, if you look at our, let's say at our acquisition model, when we made the acquisition, we said in Italy, we'll continue to grow and develop our healthcare business. This will be a platform to start implementing a baby line in Italy and start tackling the Italian market. And I can tell you that the good news is we took the time, the necessary time to do it, but we are having one line built in the Italian Ortona plant, and that's totally in line with our acquisition plan. The third element is we start saying, okay, how can we expand the Serenity brand outside of the tender channel and the regional channel? And the team is making progress and working on that one. So all these elements are soft elements, but very positive to measure the performance of the Italian market. Now, outside of that, the reality is the financials, if you look at top line and bottom line, of course, when you look at acquisition, you really look at the profit stream that the business is providing. This has helped us to improve our procurement conditions on some elements, because this gains scale and we learn, and this is continuing. That's one element. The second element is we continue to expand our profitability in Italy and strengthen the team. So all in all, that's why I said very quickly during the presentation that we were very pleased with the strong performance of Serenity in Italy. We still have room to grow, like on the brand side, how fast we can go outside of Italy with the brand. But, you know, as I said, it's a journey. We move from manufacturing to consumer goods company. There's no urgency to do it. What is important is to do it right and not fast. So in that case, there is no urgency, but it's very, very important that we better understand what the brand stands for the consumers in Italy and how we could do it in the countries where we have the right to expand it outside of Italy.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Ian Simpson of Societe Generale.
Thanks very much. A couple of questions from me, if I may, and apologies if you've answered these already. But firstly, how do you see fluff pulp pricing trending for the rest of the year in euro terms, I guess? And then secondly, cost saves. You've flagged that you've done some sort of work on energy efficiency. How much is left in the pipeline, and how should we think about cost saving realization in the second half? I mean, your guidance implies flat second half margins despite oil staying low, but it sounds like that might just be you being conservative owing to weak visibility. And then lastly, net debt EBITDA. Can you just remind us, is that impacted by factoring at all? And what would we get if we did adjust by factoring, if that's an issue? Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe I'm going to start by the last one. In fact, factoring is not impacting EBITDA at all. Factoring is impacting, if you look on our P&L, we have in our financial cost, a cost for factoring, which is a fee plus some, let's say, interest. And this cost, as we said, or I said already previously, is still lower than our average cost of debt, which means why it's still more interesting to do debt than to finance through debt.
Sorry, I was trying to get the impact that factoring had on net debt. So what would net debt to EBITDA be if we were to if the factoring were to go on balance sheet? Where would your net debt to EBITDA be?
So our factoring has, I would say, not moved almost across this this year. We have 116 and plus on one hand and 50 million on the other hand. So you add up, so you get 166, if I'm not mistaken. It's around 165 million of factoring. If they were there at the beginning of the year, they are still there now. So that's the impact of factoring.
On the fluff pulp price, as I said during the call, I said we had experienced a relatively very high RISI index combined with a very strong US dollar up to now. So I would be very pleased if somebody could tell me where the US dollar will be to the euro by the second part of the year. What is clear is in our prediction, or at least in the way we model it, is as you remember from a procurement perspective, we try to get safety with our long-term contracts and we try to protect ourselves. I would say there's a lot of capacity that is announced to come on the next year and probably at the end of this year. So the logic would be that this should translate into, at a certain point, an index decrease. The question is when it will happen. If I were the manufacturer of fluff pulp, I would try to push back as much as I can to make sure that I got as much money as I can. But again, I think, remember that when we give some elements on the index on fluff as well on the oil-based commodities, we give you the market position, which doesn't translate into the Ontex position. We have our own procurement team that is doing their efforts and their work to get special agreements and special protections that we will not disclose, because last year we gave a lot of information and apparently the competition was happy to get the information. But what is clear is the way we model our full year forecast, when we say we aim to deliver our 30 basis points of margin expansion, EBITDA margin expansion, it's based on assumption that we believe are realistic and reflecting the best knowledge we have from the last two quarters of the year. Now, if you look at efficiency, it's the bread and butter of Ontex. It's not a one-year program. This has been in the company for years, almost forever. It's the culture of the company. And I'm still fascinated after 3 years. Every time we talk about efficiency, the team is doing an outstanding job, and by the way, it's reflected also on the Q2 results, in bringing more efficiency to the party and bringing more saving. So it's a balance. By the way, when we built our year, we build efficiency on a full year basis, and as you can imagine, we try to balance it on the four quarters. We don't want to avoid to get a full benefit on the first half and nothing on the second, or the opposite. That would create more complexity and good or bad surprise to the market and to ourselves. So it's more balanced across the year. And our program is continuing. If you remember, we said we have different types of efficiency programs. Some of them are on procurement. Some of them are on supply chain. Some of them are on R&D. And some of them are on manufacturing. And those four, continuing our journey and ahead of our plan on the first half, so confident on the full year, with, of course, some of them that are significantly ahead, some of them are slightly behind, but the net is very positive. So we are confident to deliver our efficiencies opportunity over the full year as planned.
That's very clear. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I would now like to hand the call back to Mr. Bouazizi for any additional remarks. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Well, as I hope you will feel, we are pleased with these robust results for the first half of the year. We still have the second half to go, and we'll work efficiently and with a lot of discipline and focus to deliver our results. I would like to thank you all for the interest you have shown in Ontex being on the call today. We'll update you with our Q3 trading update on November 5th of this year. And then I would like to thank you again, and goodbye for now. Thanks a lot.
This concludes the Ontex second quarter and half year results conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.